You know what's a lot more fun than thinking about how to best pay off student loans? Thinking about how rich you're going to be one day in spite of your student loans. That's why we started the Financially Free Era podcast. Financially Free Era, if you search that term on any podcast platform, you're going to find it. It's hosted by my colleague Megan McGuire over at SLP Wealth. And this podcast is where we dive deep into all the things you want to know about how to be wealthy one day. How do you best maximize tax loopholes and write-offs? How do you best invest money? How do you make smart money moves in spite of even a very large six-figure student loan balance that are going to get you where you want to be much sooner? Go follow the Financially Free Era podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. I promise you, if you like Student Loan Planners podcast, you will love Financially Free Era by SLP Wealth. Search that term, follow the show, you will love it. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner podcast. It's Travis, and today we're going to talk about all of the many head-spinning regulations that have got to get published very soon if we are have a prayer of having the RAP plan get implemented by July 1. There is a lot the Department of Ed has to get done. I don't see a whole lot of evidence that they're doing that much. And so I thought I would call out all the different things that have got to come out really soon if the Department of Ed is going to be able to implement the RAP plan and the One Big Beautiful Bill Act and everything involved with it. Here's kind of a little bit of a high-level overview as I see it so far. The SAVE plan settlement that occurred in like December 2025 requires new regulations. At some point, you've got to come out with new regulations because of that court settlement. And the RISE committee that was trying to figure out the One Big Beautiful Bill Act changes, they agreed to the changes, the proposed changes, but nothing has happened. So that still needs to go to the Federal Registry and then still needs to go to public comment. And there's a chance that it's not in place by July, is according to some sources that I have. That's crazy to think about. I wouldn't go that far. I think it's probably in place by July 1 with just a rushed process. It doesn't surprise me that this person said this, one of my sources, just because of everything that has to happen. Okay. Cause so think about, you know, the fact that it's coming up here as I'm recording this late January, and we still don't know if nurse practitioners and PA students are going to be limited to $20,500 per year federal loans, or if it's going to be $50,000 because at the last second they're going to be called professional students. I mean, that's kind of a big deal, isn't it? Like, a lot of people that are trying to go to PA school might not even know if they can attend until the last second. I'm hearing more and more schools that are sort of rushing to recode people's start dates to June of this year. And the reason is because if you start in June and take out a loan in June, you get grandfathered in for 3 years or your degree length, whichever is shorter. A lot of four-year programs even, I see them rushing to allow people to come in the door in the spring, like late spring this year, to try to take advantage of Grad Plus. And that's helpful for students. It's also a way for the schools to kick the can down the road on implementation of this because they don't know what the heck is going on. You know, it's just very confusing, right? So, and I think some of the schools might be hoping for Congress to switch over in this upcoming election and then maybe having some fights over, you know, redoing some of these student loan provisions and borrowing limits. Who knows? I think that we're seeing a lot of the schools start to realize, oh, this is getting real now. And for med, dental, vet school that are four-year programs, your second, third, fourth-year students are kind of unimpacted for the moment because they're going to graduate with a ton of debt and really only the RAP plan to use for 30 years. I mean, that's a brutal change compared to the way it used to be. For folks that are going this fall to school, you're going to have, you know, again, some people that are rushing to start before that July 1st cutoff date. But even so, we still need for existing borrowers so many things answered with the SAVE plan being struck down and the settlement requiring new regs and all these things. And so there's just a lot of chaos right now. I know you're not surprised by that. If you listen to this podcast regularly, you're not surprised by student loan chaos. It is the order of the day. It's the Student Loan Planner podcast. I just thought I would share some things that we're seeing in our Student Loan Planner community and app. So this is for the folks that are in the SLP Insiders and pay for that. And, you know, I mean, it's just really kind of interesting to see just all of the wild stuff going on with this. I mean, honestly, it's pretty crazy. By the way, if you want to join that SLP Insiders, I think we have it in the show notes. So you could click on the link for that in the show description if you're interested in joining that. And I think also, by the way, studentloanplanner.com/insiders is a link that'll take you to a page to sign up if you want to see some of these comments that are going on in the insiders community. But basically, one person is saying that they're just like asking for processing forbearances and they're getting them somehow. I'm not so sure about that. Other folks are saying, you know, that their servicer is doing all kinds of weird stuff, like giving them wrong payments, giving them incorrect information about, I mean, just kind of, I guess, par for the course. If you've been listening to this podcast for a long time, it's no shock to hear servicers just saying a bunch of things and it may or may not being true. But we're seeing some real interesting comments that people are making in the community right now about the chaos that's going on. To pivot a little bit, Democratic senators are demanding answers around these lack of regulations and guidance that Department of Ed has not issued or not put out there. They sent a letter to Department of Ed. There's huge numbers of questions in this. I think it's probably worthwhile time-wise to read some of these questions because it shows what the Democratic side of the aisle in the Senate thinks is the lack of clarity that borrowers are getting around the end of the SAVE plan. Here's some of their questions. One, how long will borrowers get to switch to another IDR plan? Two, what info will Ed provide to borrowers about higher costs of alternative plans and what to do if they can't afford higher payments? Three, by what date will servicers and Ed reach out to let them know concrete steps about what to do next? Four, will Ed allow borrowers forced out of SAVE to enroll with their current income information and calculate monthly payments? That's a hint from the Democratic senators that that's what they want, is to have people have very low payments. And then they say their second follow-up question to that is, if not, will Ed require borrowers to recertify their income in order to switch to a new plan? I think that the Democratic senators are essentially saying, yeah, we think we know that you're not going to allow this. Number five, what are Ed's plans to support borrowers that do not select another repayment plan? And will these borrowers be put in a different repayment plan? If so, which plan? If they don't pick a plan and are put in the standard plan, will they be given time to switch to a new plan ahead of their next billing date? If so, how much time? Will Ed give effect to the language of enrolled SAVE borrowers' IDR applications stating that borrowers who request the payment with the lowest monthly payment or who request a plan they do not qualify for request to be placed in a plan with the lowest monthly payment? Yeah, so this is a very long part of the question. Basically, they're protesting that Ed threw away the question, put me in the cheapest plan. Basically, that's what they're saying. The Democratic senators liked that question. The Republican Department of Ed doesn't like that question. They want it to be very clear that you should pay off your loans and pay as much as possible. Basically, that's what the fight is about that. How will this transition be communicated to borrowers? How many current email addresses does Ed have for borrowers in SAVE forbearance? What is the open rate and bounce rate for these borrowers' emails? Will Ed provide a notice by mail? And what's the return rate from physical mail? How much notice will borrowers be provided regarding forced placement in another plan ahead of their next billing date? So there's a lot of that in there. What the Democratic senators are saying is like, hey, how are you going to get people to pay? Because like people are not even used to communicating with Department of Ed. So many people that are in SAVE are ignoring Department of Ed stuff. How can you expect people to answer their email and answer their physical mail? I mean, it's a reasonable question. I also think that probably with any government agency, there's a really huge bounce back rate and open rate. And, you know, nobody likes to open stuff from debt collectors and things like that in general. But I think that that's interesting that they're asking that. Next question from the Democratic senators. What were the factual, legal, and financial rationales underlying Ed's repeated guidance in the SAVE plan? That's them protesting Department of Ed not wanting to do it anymore. Seven, why did Ed decide to propose the settlement now when the statutory termination of SAVE is not effective until July 2028? Again, that's them protesting the Republicans pushing to end the SAVE plan early because they have the power to. Eight, when does Ed expect the new repayment assistance plan to be in effect? It should be pretty easy, July. Nine, why did Department of Ed rescind almost other parts of the regulation that created the SAVE plan? Even provisions unrelated to the plan itself, including provisions to enable borrowers in default to access IBR, protections for borrowers' credit scores, and provisions to streamline and application and recertification process for IDR plans. That's because they wanted to throw out the whole thing because they didn't want to include anything that the Biden administration did. I'm providing that commentary myself there. 10. Provide internal analysis showing projected financial impact of the settlement on borrowers who are forced into other repayment plans, including the amount the borrower's monthly payments will increase. They could. Will they? I don't know. Maybe they could just ignore them. I'm not sure. Number 11, what steps is Ed planning to take to ensure borrowers are not blindsided by higher monthly payments as a result of the settlement? My commentary there, I'm not sure this Department of Ed cares about that. Number 12, what is Ed's timeline for the upcoming negotiated rulemaking to effectuate this settlement? Number 12, that's what everybody's wondering. That's why I thought I would call this out in today's podcast episode title, just because literally nobody knows. They're supposed to reply to all this by February 6th. We'll see if that happens. 13, how long does Ed expect it to take for servicers to process applications, given the backlog of 800,000 unprocessed applications as of December 15th? Of 2025, what steps will Ed take to ensure borrowers attempting to switch from saved to another IDR plan are not harmed by processing delays, such as being reported delinquent or lost months of credit towards IDR PSLF? Will borrowers have any recourse if they lose out on months of credit towards loan discharge due to processing delays? My thoughts on that, just, you know, again, I don't think they care a whole lot if people lose out on credit. 14, can you provide a timeline for when Ed will update its systems to allow borrowers who are previously ineligible for IBR to enroll? They pretty much theoretically have fixed that, from my understanding. And then the last comment from this Democratic senator letter says, in addition to answering these questions, given all the challenges raised by this settlement, we request the department to give borrowers 6 months to apply to switch plans and hold borrowers harmless in the meantime by putting them in a processing forbearance that counts towards forgiveness, including PSLF. And we want Department of Ed to be transparent throughout this whole process. Wow. Reasonable, but will Department of Ed do that? I think there's almost no chance. I think that this is sort of the style of the way the Biden administration managed student loans, which was to say, let's put off things, let's allow processing forbearances, let's treat borrowers with the lightest hand possible because we want to help borrowers and have them pay as little as possible and get maximum forgiveness, right? That was the goal. And this administration's goal is not that. And I think that if the Democrats were in the majority in the Senate, maybe this letter would be a little bit more seriously answered. There'd probably be hearings. Officials would have to go in front of Congress and answer a bunch of things. But in the absence of that power, Democrats are in the minority in the Senate. This letter will probably get a response, but it's probably not going to be a response that cares very much, right? It's going to be, I think, the minimum response required. And I think that they'll essentially say, oh, we've got it. We're figuring it out. We'll do it when we get to it. Internal analysis says, you know, I'm putting myself in the Department of Ed's shoes for a second. The internal analysis will probably say something like, this is a legal student loan giveaway of the Biden administration to the rich, highly educated Democrat voters. Like, that's, I don't know, that would be the tone that I might expect in a response to this. You know, in general, this is on the radar of everybody that there's not a lot of rules written. There's not a lot of plans that have been made. The wrap plan is supposed to be available July 1. Meanwhile, the rules for it are kind of complicated. The stepwise function calculation between 1 and 10% of income if you're below 100K of income, and then 10% of income if you're above 100K of income, that's kind of complicated. All of the lack of rules with the SAVE plan settlement getting struck down, you have to calculate things like what the family size rules are. You have to figure out, again, what professions are professional degree professions and which ones are not. You've got to have enough time for schools to communicate to students what they need to know about what, you know, amount of loans they'll be able to get for school. And all this is in the context of schools rushing to try to get people enrolled in springtime semesters so they can get subject to old borrowing limits for 3 more years. And that's kind of interesting, because if you do that to somebody and they sign up for dental school in May and they borrow for semesters, you know, or the years 1, 2, and 3, in year 4, if they need to borrow 150K and they can't borrow it because their federal max is 50K and they need 150, where are they going to get the other 100? The school's not going to give it to them. Can their parents give it to them? Probably not. And so you're going to have people that enroll early in these schools that are not going to be able to finish their degrees, potentially. So a lot of this is just kind of gambling. I think it's kind of gambling all around. I think that the Democratic senators are sort of gambling that they'll be able to get some leverage with winning 1 or 2 houses of Congress in the midterms to get leverage over the administration and maybe change some of the parts they disagree with the most about these student loan reforms. I think the schools are gambling that they'll be able to deal with a different administration 3 years from now when they need to figure out the problem of how do they get a bunch of fourth-year students to graduate that can't access unlimited federal loans. And I think that students are going to be gambling about being able to get private loans in some cases, because a lot of the lenders, I'm not so sure what options they're going to make available to people that are no cosigner. A lot of people are going to be limited to situations if they have a cosigner, I think. So all these things are a lot of things to follow, a lot of things to pay attention to right now. if you're a borrower waiting on these regulations, I would just say you have no choice but to wait. And then when the regulations come out, we've got the final version of the RISE committee regulations that will get published, which is like the normal OB3 regulations, and then the regulations associated with the SABE plan settlement that also have to come out. And maybe they want to do all these all at the same time. I'm not sure. But, you know, it's a lot of work. And Department of Ed has been cut back enormously in terms of personnel. So who's going to be left to do all the work? That's kind of an obvious question, right? So that's one reason we think it's probably taking a while because of so many people that were cut at Department of Ed. Probably I would assume morale there is pretty dang low, would be my guess. And so the desire to work really hard is probably limited by the people who are surviving after all these layoffs that have occurred. But we're going to be here and we're going to follow it for you so that you don't have to stress, so that you can hear what matters and what doesn't, and so that you can be informed with what you need to know as you decide what to do to mitigate any negative impacts in your financial future. If you have any questions for our pod, go to studentloanplanner.com/voicemail and leave any questions you've got about any, all these regulations or stuff going on right now with the wrap plan. If you have any suggestions for other episodes, you know, leave them. I also like to get feedback. So if you want to leave some positive feedback or some constructive feedback, you could also use the studentloanplanner.com/voicemail hotline to leave us some thoughts. And if you need a plan in the midst of the chaos, studentloanplanner.com/book. If you need a one-time plan, and if you want something that's more comprehensive, check out our slpwealth.com financial planning biz. Thank you for listening to the Student Loan Planner podcast. Have a great rest of your week. Are you on the free Student Loan Planner email list? If yes, you can upgrade your experience and discover student loan loopholes so good, they might get repealed if I talk about them publicly. Find out my very best thought leadership that I really just can't be super open about anymore, unfortunately. If you want to get our very best tips, not just the ones that I can share for free, go to studentloanplanner.com/insider to get a special discount for your year membership. That's studentloanplanner.com/insider and get our very best dozens of bonus content and tips that's going to save you money and get you out of student debt faster. And if you're already an SLP insider, please reply back to those emails and let me know how I can make it even more valuable.